head.
My friend, I'll tell you, I've just been sitting here thinking about it. I think John had a pretty good idea there. But if it were me, I think I would feign that I was on a liquid diet, trying to lose some weight, and just drink the wine. KK4JBQ.
I guess I can have it, Miss Wendy. I considered that. You know, I don't want to set the wrong example on radio here, but I could just stay blitzed the whole week and not have to deal with it, I guess. But she's been really good about it. She recognizes that, you know, this may be an issue. So she has pointed out that there is a baker that's down the street, a fresh bakery, and there's a little meat shop there that, you know, sells, you know, luncheon meaty and fresh meat butchery kind of thing, you know, and cheese. So I figure between enough wine and bread and cheese, I'll probably be all right. But I absolutely refused and still refuse to give up my MRE. I'm just not going to do it.
BQ. Thank you, Wendy. Wine is very nutritious. You know, lots of fruit, you know, that kind of thing. And slip in an MRE when nobody's looking, sure. Yeah. And wine and good bread and good meat, that sounds like a Frenchman's diet. I mean, you'll be right in, really. We're all thinking about you, and we'll be praying for you. KK4JBQ. Breathe in.
You got a couple of good suggestions there, Chad. I had thought about it, but when I was in China, fresh raw fruit was something that I hit real heavily on, and on the very practical side of it, you might have a conversation with I'll remember the word tomorrow, at the drugstore about things that you could take with you that would help settle an upset stomach. Because I know in China, with the time difference and the fact that we were working with a Chinese company, and they treated us very, very well. But I say we'd made the decision that we were going to eat native, understanding that they eat stuff that we don't consider food. But anyway, talking to your people at the drugstore about some things to take with you that could help ease your stomach, and that's something that, you know, totally ignoring some of your questions about the food, just the time travel and difference and, you know, all the other things that you're going to go through may cause some upset stomach problems too. So that might be worth doing, is have a conversation and take a few packets of things, because I know where I work, so we stopped by our infirmary, and they supplied us with several things, and I found some of them very, very useful. Let me get through the day, and, you know, eventually your body adjusts, and you do okay. And I spent 20 days over there, so I had time to adjust. But that's the practical side. But we wish you well, and I said it sounds really interesting, and just kind of go with the flow as best you can. We'll turn that back to the rest of the group, and we'll be clear. KC4EZN.
So the last situation was not really a situation, just kind of weird here. Let me make sure I got it. A car. We're going to drive about 2 hours to Normandy from the airport. And so when you rent a car in France, we were looking through, you know, the contract and all that. So if you have a vehicle in France, according to what we read, you got to have a high-visibility jacket in the car, a set of flares in the car, and every vehicle is required to have their own breathalyzer machine or breathalyzer device in the car. And I just, I got thinking about that for a little bit, and I guess they view, you know, alcohol over there a little bit different. I'm not a drinker. I'll have a refreshing beverage every now and then. But this is the cider region of France where they do cider. It's supposed to have some world-renowned, you know, cider. I tried to tell her that, hey, we can go to Hendersonville and get cider. I'm sure James up there in Tuxedo can tell us where to go get some cider. But no, we're going to get cider in France. And that's okay, but I'm not too, I don't know exactly what to think about a country that requires you to have your own breathalyzer in a vehicle. Like I said, I'm not a drinker, but if that was the situation here, then I would, and if I was a drinker, I would have to make sure that the batteries were dead in the breathalyzer if I was required to have one in a vehicle. You know what I mean?
Designated drivers. When I went to China, they furnished the transportation, and we didn't have to worry about anything like that. Read all those rules, and the only other thing recommendation that I would make was, if you did trip over something, remember the American consulate, wherever you're at, their job is to help Americans navigate the French legal system. I teach merit badge for scout citizenship in the world, and the example I give them, believe it or not, is if you got a speeding ticket in France, what do you do with it? Well, you call the American consulate and say, hey, what do I do? And it's their job to explain to you what you have to do, or they may be able to take care of it for you, but at least ways you have got somebody that you can call that is an American, or that can explain to you what happens. But I got a funny feeling that you're not going to get me in trouble. I think if you were, we would have heard more about it on the news. But anyway, just kind of hang loose and enjoy yourself there, learn to read the speed limit signs. I don't know if they're faster or slower than us, but, and then the other thing I don't know is which side of the road you drive on. I know when we went to Bermuda in that taxi cab, I almost screamed at the cab driver because he was turning left into the wrong lane as far as I was concerned. Now, in Bermuda, it was okay, but, I had to bite my tongue to keep from screaming at the cab driver and telling him he was driving on the wrong side of the road. So, anyway, have fun, Chad. We'll talk to you when you get back. Takes you for easy here.
Cindy, take it.
It's been very interesting. I guess the breathalyzer must be. I've heard some people talking about how they expect you to blow into that before you can even start the car. So it must be their way of cutting down on drunk driving. But it will be interesting to hear what you learned about after the experience. You know what? Because I'm sure you'll run into a few like your French tour guide who can explain the why that policy is in place and what how it's affected society. That'll be very interesting. As far as the grocery situation goes, I really like your idea of hitting the local grocery store or the, you know, the little market. When I visited other countries, particularly Germany, every little store, they sell these little cloth bags, like a little cotton reusable grocery sack. And then people just carry them around, and then when you stop at the grocery store, you know, that's where you put your purchases. But then you could stash in there your, you know, an MRE and whatever. And the grocery stores would bake bread every day, so you could get fresh bread. And I found some farmer cheese that I really liked. And so I think your idea of just carry around a stash, and if you carry around in a bag that you purchased there from a grocery store, then it looks like, totally like you're on board with eating all the local stuff, and you'll always have your selection there. And so I guess it just depends on how discreet your wife wants you to be when she's there eating the sales. And you want to sneak out of your bag part of your MRE or your bread or whatever from the bakery. So I think you've hit upon a really good solution there. And I also think it's pretty cool to go to Normandy and eat an MRE from 1949. That sounds like definitely you should do that for at least one of your meals if you can squeeze it in. So it's been interesting, this discussion, and it is going to be a fabulous trip for you. I'm really excited about it. And I'll be anxious to hear about the adventures of the rental car and the foods you ate versus the foods that Anna ate and things like that. Are there any other interesting things coming up?
So you know, it's there's a nomenclature with the food. Strawberries, reconstitutable, type B, 1948. And she's just not having it. I'm not having it. And today, I'm gonna turn it over. But today is cleanup day. So we and her, you know, clean, straighten the house up on Sunday lunchtime. And I keep noticing all these Amazon bags. You know, the little plastic bags. That's in the trash can. Because I'm pulling the trash bag out of the trash can, take it out to the truck. And I see all of these. And I said, honey, where are all these white? What are you ordering from Amazon? Well, I bought you some new clothes. So there goes the bib overalls. No bib overalls. And I'm probably not going to be able to wear my Crocs either. And so today I had to try on clothes, and I hate trying on clothes. I hate it. But I mean, I got to make sure they fit. You know, I'm a pretty big fella, and you know, so I just have to leave my overalls here. So no overalls. And today it's supposed to rain the entire week we're there. So I told her, here's what we're gonna do. We're going to take this plastic coat that you bought me on Amazon, and we're going to collect water in it. I'm going to funnel that into the dried strawberries from 1948. And we're just going to enjoy the strawberries on the beaches of Normandy. And I'm not sure. She hadn't really told me whether she's agreed to it or not, but I think I can sneak it in. But Miss Wendy, it's been a pleasure talking to you. It always is a pleasure talking to you. And I hope you have a wonderful week, you and Mr. Mark. And I hope everybody on the net has a wonderful week. And I'm just gonna turn it over to you. I know you got more to do, but you and Mark are a pleasure to talk to. This is Kilo Oscar 4, November Uniform Echo. I'll be clear, Miss Wendy, it's back to you.
RNUE, this is KN4HTP. Thank you so much for hanging around for RAG2. Yeah, I'm sure you can get her talked into eating at least one bite of those strawberries, and I think it's an awesome idea, so I'm really glad you're going for it. Oh, thanks for sharing your humor with us, and I hope it's an excellent adventure. And thanks to everyone else for commenting in on our conversation. It's been a pleasure. As the net controller, I'm going to see if there is anyone that wants to check in at this time. This will be the final call for check-ins or for comments. To check in all the way through the alphabet, Alpha through Zulu, please call KN4HTP or net control. All right, this is KN4HTP, net control with the Blue Ridge 2 meter net. I will submit our net report electronically. I'm not going to have it broadcast on the radio because I had the batteries die on the electronic device here. So I'm going to have to, that's going to take me a few minutes. So FYI, we had 54 check-ins tonight, and I will send the information into the, well, I picture it as sending it into the repeater, but I know Dave gets it, so the net manager, I guess, is more accurate. And so this is KN4HTP, now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net with our thanks for checking in. We will now return the repeater back to normal amateur use. 73s, and good night, everybody.
HTP, KO4NUE.
What's up?
Give me, if you want to now, give me your info, and I'll send the net report out with your call if you want to do that. Or Dave, your choice.
I would be happy for you to do that for me. So let me know what items you're ready for me to tell you.
If you'll put a number on this, we can count it as a piece of traffic.
Have this be number 6.
Check-in's 54, traffic is 2. You good with that?
That sounds correct. Chad, it was a good evening. Hope you guys have an excellent trip.
KO4NUE, I'm clear.
TP clear.
4JBQ, KO4K, Andy, K4OIM, KI4LZI, K4OIM, K4JBQ. This is KO4NUE.
KK4JBQ.
I guess it's me and you tonight, so if you got a few minutes, we'll sit and talk a little bit if you're up for it.
I was just thinking here, just sitting here thinking about the things I didn't do today. Go ahead.
So I'm just about finished with the Bobcat, and oh my word, just a menace. I mean, it's been a menace trying to get this thing finished up before the trip. But today, I had to drain the hydraulic system on the thing and replace a whole bunch of hydraulic lines. So it has made a complete mess in the floor in the shop. And there is a big puddle of hydrostat fluid that accumulated in one of the low spots in the floor. And so yesterday I went down to finish up, and Casey opens the door on the house, and he comes down to the shop, and I wasn't paying attention what he was doing, and I guess he thought it was water, I guess, and just stretched out and just laid right down in the hydrostat fluid right side from head to tail. So I had to come up here to the house and get him in the shower and try to get all that mess off of him. And it just turned, this just turned into a mess. I mean a mess. But after I got him cleaned up, I finally went down there and got the thing straightened out. I got the pins straightened out on it. I was lucky enough, I had a inch and a quarter reamer. And that saved me, because that kept me from having to line bore the thing. So I just tacked the pivot points off in place and then just run the reamer in by hand. I mean, it took me, it's so big, I had to do it by hand, but I got them straightened out and re-machined two new pins, and just really saved me a lot of time not having to line board the thing. But it's worked out, and it's just about ready for pickup. So that's what I've been on for the last couple of days, cleaning dogs and cleaning bobcats. So, excuse me. Go ahead and take it, Larry.
As you were talking about that, when you did the FaceTime connection with me, and I saw the bobcat, and I saw what you were, and you were explaining what you were going to do to it, what you intended to do, and I thought, this is not a one man job. And but that's just coming from somebody that doesn't have the experience you do and the tools that you do. And so it sounds like, as far as that goes, it revealed itself as something. I think you just got a big blessing there. I really do. What disturbed me most about it, however, was KC's approach to the puddle. Are you quite certain that he did not, I'm assuming it's he, that he did not lick any of that stuff? KK4JBQ.
Me and Dad have got a, how do you say it, I think procedure is a strong word. We have had a verbal discussion. Any time that antifreeze is dropped in any vehicle in the shop, we keep a 5-gallon bucket over there in the corner with the lid that is got a piece of rope on it, that so the lid can't be lost. So we collect the antifreeze and put a lid on it, because you know that is extremely toxic to dogs, the antifreeze is. But I've never had an issue with the oil. I didn't see him drink any of it. I'm sure that he has a refined palate, if you know what I mean. So I'm confident that he didn't drink any of it, but he did just, I mean, lay right in it. He favors, he likes to lay on his right side, and he loves to lay on concrete, I guess, because it's cool, I guess. And if he has got, he is a golden, so if he has got an opportunity to do anything with water besides swim, he hates to swim, but he loves to get in wet grass and just get soaking wet. Loves it. So I don't think he drank any of it. It's been 24 hours by now. But I'm pretty sure, as refined as his palate is, that I think I'm safe. But you want to talk about a mess? I mean, just a mess.
can only imagine how much a mess. And I wasn't thinking so much as his licking the puddle of hydraulic fluid as licking himself to try to clean himself. He probably got to it quick enough that he didn't get any, he didn't ingest any. But you'll be able to keep a good eye on him for a couple of days, right? Oh, by the way, who's taking care of him while you're gone?
We got family, her brother and family's coming to stay in the house while we're gone and care for him and Pixie. And watch over her mother as well. So they'll take care of the two dogs and her mother and the bird feeders. So I think we got everything covered.
KK4JBQ. I just, you know, where animals are concerned, I feel, you know, being the smartest creature, we have a terrible responsibility to look after them. If we take them on, if we invite them into the family, our responsibility is, what would you say, total. And so that's where my mind was going, and, you know, sorry to drag you along through that, but that's where my mind was going. What else? I just wondered if you didn't take survival training and, you know, eat bugs and things under rocks and stuff like that. I'm sure if I got hungry enough, I'd eat the bark off the tree. KK4JBQ.
Not a course that gets a certificate, but I did 2 days of just, you know, nothing, not even worth mentioning. And it was mostly, you know, hey, this is, you can eat this and you can eat that. We really didn't put it to the test, if you know what I mean. So, but I had a couple of bad experiences with having to eat food, having to eat it, on 2 separate occasions that, I just, that's not a good experience. And I'm just, you know, I'm hoping, and I don't want it to sound worse than it is. It's just the deal is when during the deployments, when I go through a circadian rhythm shift, in other words, jet lag, it affects my digestion and everything else that comes with that. Let me word it that way. And that's the concern I have, is that when I'm in that window of going through that, the sun cycle shifting on my body, I have to be real careful what I eat in that period, because it just messes with me really bad. And it's not so much, you know, snails and things like that. I mean, I can, if I want to eat it, I'm not going to eat it. It's just, I don't want to be in a situation to where I have to make a choice between the snakehead stew and snail creme brulee. You know, if there's other options on the menu, then, you know, that's kind of where I want to be. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
I understand what you mean. When I took a survival course, it would make clear, well, we sort of talked about what our squeamies were, squeamishness was. And most people thought about it being alive while you put it in your mouth. And so the instructor said, well, all you got to do is just pinch the head off, you know, and it's not going to be squirmy then. Well, you just, just imagine, you know, there was, you know, it was four guys and two gals in our group. And I swear one of them threw up right then. It was so funny. But we didn't just talk about it. We peeled bark off the trees and ate the larvae that was in there and turned rocks over and just picked it up and shoved it in. And I think it's like it's a threshold you got to go over. You know, it's worse on this side than it is after, you know. And it's just the thinking about it that does it to you. Yeah. Anyway, enough talk about that. There's a restaurant here, I can't remember the name of it, that serves exotic food. So they serve snake, rattlesnake, meat, giraffe, but some things like bear and so it was mostly foods that we're not accustomed to. And you know more about your constitution, let's call it, than anybody else. So whether you can handle these things it has to be something you've experienced before. So if you eaten some unusual things, maybe some things for the first time, and it didn't agree with you, I couldn't agree more that going to the pharmacy and just being plain with your question to the pharmacist, they'll fix you up, fix something that you can carry along with you. Don't put it in a suitcase. Carry it as a carry-on and have it with you all the time, even on the plane. And I'm curious about how long the flight is. KK4JBQ.
And honestly, I don't want to know. It's better that I don't know. Just get on the plane and just, you know, take what comes, I guess. But once I get past the airplane flight, I'll be good. It's not a fear of airplanes that's the issue. It's just being in that small space, I guess, and not being able to, you know, easily get up and move around. And, you know, I have got restless leg syndrome really bad, and that's horrible. If it weren't for that, I wouldn't be an issue. But, I mean, that's just, that's not a good situation, to have to deal with that. And I think, you know, anxiety contributes to a little bit of, contributes to the restless leg. But it'll work out. It will. I'll make it work out, and we're gonna have a good time. Some of it I'm just going on about aggravating her a little bit. She's been picking at me the last couple of days, so she. Oh my goodness! she finally got me figured out, Larry.
KK4JBQ, you're with somebody this long. Don and I celebrated 28, the last anniversary. So you're with somebody long enough, and they do have you figured out. They know what you're going to say, and they've got a comeback already planned. And so you have to plan several steps ahead of that, I guess. I don't know. But I was just wondering if, when you were a child, and this is just from my experience with these kind of maladies in conversations with other people. When you were a child, could you go to sleep in the car with the motion of the automobile, the sounds of the road, stopping, starting, and that kind of thing? Could you go to sleep and stay asleep in the car as a child?
No.
Can you read something in a car while it's in motion?
Can. KL4NUE for station ID. Yes, I can.
You don't have motion sickness, but to release yourself to sleep, you know, if you're not totally exhausted. And I played so hard when I was a kid. When I got in the car and it was time to go home, I just fell right asleep. But if you're concerned about the motion of the car, if you're concerned about the safety of the driver, and I trusted my dad to drive like nobody. He was a truck driver before, long haul truck driver before he was a father. So, you know, he quit all that when he, and I'm glad of it, but he quit all that when he had a family. But he could really drive. I mean, the man was a very safe driver. I trusted him implicitly, and I could go to sleep. And that was some, you know, as I look back on it, and I haven't thought about this in years, just, you know, what we've talked about has brought this to my mind. I could fall asleep like nothing. I mean, right away. And sleep until the car stopped. And it just seems like when the car stopped, I woke up. So I must have been subconsciously aware of the movement in some way, but waked up fresh, waked up, you know, ready to go another round, you know. Gosh, I don't know. It's probably 11 to 14 hours, I'm thinking. But I don't know what plane you're, you know, what speed you're traveling at, what sort of headwinds you might encounter. It's probably an average time for that trip. But it's a long way from here. What day are you going to be leaving?
Leaving midweek, I think. And, we got to take care of some business. A few odds and ends before we head out, but I'm gonna work on those tomorrow and Tuesday, and then I got a club meeting on Wednesday, so I'm gonna go up there and do the class on or the presentation on the Warren's repeater network. And then we'll be, you know, ready to go after that. But it's gonna all work out. It's gonna work out just fine. I get settled in, I'll be good to go.
What to have? You don't know what's coming, but that's the attitude to have. I certainly wish you a safe trip there and back. If you've never been in that country before, it'll be an experience. You'll carry it around with you the rest of your life. Notice everything. I know you will. And you and Anna just have a marvelous time with each other. It's a rare opportunity. I don't suppose I haven't flown in, oh goodness, 20 years anyway. And I don't expect that I will again. So it's a rare opportunity to do this. You're very fortunate to be able to share it with somebody too. That's the best. I mean, you just got the best. And you know that. KK4JBQ.
Oh, Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the highlight right there, doing this with her. And I'm sure there's other, I mean, what wife wants to go to France and look at, you know, a battlefield? I don't know of many. So I'm just having to assume that she's doing this to, you know, refine me a little bit, and I'm okay with that. But one of the other places we're going is the Museum of Surrender in Reims, and that's where the I think it was World War II surrender was signed, and they. From what we've read, after the surrender was signed, was documented, they have preserved the room as it was during shortly after the signature. So they've got some other things there that you can go see. We're also going to, is it an abbey or a cathedral? That a cathedral in Reims. Where a monk, I believe he was a monk, contacted the Allies before the bombing campaign started, notified the Allies that most of the Germans had left. Please do not bomb the Abbey. In exchange for not targeting the Abbey, if you make it to occupy the area, you'll need a place to set up your headquarters. So in exchange for not destroying the place, Allied Supreme headquarters was offered by the monk, and they took it. And Bayeux, not Reims, Bayeux. So we're gonna go take a look at that, and you know, get some cider, and there's some cider tours. I think during World War One, maybe the French people in the countryside would take their cider and buried it during World War One for, I guess, to have something during hard times. And they found that technique of, you know, putting it underground or putting it in the ground kind of refined the taste a little bit. So I don't know. I'm not a big cider guy. But I'll, when in Rome, do as, you know, the Romans, I guess. But I know that there's a portion of me that I'm not being completely straight up here, and that is, it's not so much the food and the plane ride and all that. Those are things that, you know, are a concern. I think realistically, seeing that place is going to be a pretty emotional experience. I know it will for me. I don't know that it will be for her, but I know emotionally what that's gonna do to me, and it should. I'm not trying to say I'm, you know, this weepy kind of fella. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, you know, there's a lot of people lost their lives there, and to me that's a special place. So knowing that I'm going to have to deal with some of that emotion, I guess because of my history. I think that's probably the crux of the issue there for me. And I'm blaming it on food and airplanes, but I'm pretty sure that's going to be something that's probably going to just wipe me out. KO4NUE for station ID.
KK4JBQ. Yeah, it's good to have something to put it on to, you know, like things start getting to you, just complain about the food. Yeah. Well, with the cider, I'll suggest have a pastry of some kind. You know, cider and donuts, and they probably don't have donuts, but something like a donut. You know, a fried thing goes real well with cider. Yeah, so among all your plans, I'm sure one of the things you want to do in Normandy, you've already mentioned it, that you want to take rubbings. So just in case, depending on what your carry-on looks like, take some materials with you. Whatever the paper is that you're going to use, and whatever the rubbing is, if it's charcoal or, you know, a grease pencil or a crayon or, you know, whatever you're using, be sure to take a small supply, you know, of that kind of thing, folded, not rolled, so that you can, in the worst case scenario, you taking what you need with you to accomplish the minimum requirement. So when you get there, you might be able to find better materials, more suitable when you're, you know, in country. But that just sounds like the finest thing to do. Has anyone come forward and asked you to take a rubbing for them? KK4JBQ.
I've had two. One is, so I'm in the American Legion group in Tryon, post number 250. And the commander there is the commander of the American Legion and the VFW in Columbus. And he has... the VFW in Columbus is called the House of Flags, and I don't know how many flags they have accumulated up there. I think thousands would be a fair number of any kind of flag. Every flag that the United States has been through before it was the United States. If it's an American flag, they've got an original or a replica or something up there. It's really a sight to see. You'll think it's really sounds that interesting, but it's three floors. So anyway, to answer your question, yeah, so I'm gonna make a rubbing to put in the American Legion post and frame it and put it on the wall there at the American Legion post in Tron, because we have got a couple of members that are World War II veterans, and so I'm personally going to do that for them and put it in the post. And then I've had another person ask to, not a specific person. And I've thought a little bit about that, why no one has asked. And perspectively, when you put the invasion occasion in perspective as far as casualties go. When you compare that to the total number that were killed in action, the Normandy campaign was just a fraction, not even a fraction, of what, how many died. Now, if you look at the European theater, that's a different number. But I think the first day was 2,600, if I remember correctly. I'll have to go back and look. I've written it down somewhere. But so, yes, to answer your question, two.
JBQ. Well, Normandy was a different thing. The landing craft came up to the beach, and when you stepped off, you were dead. And the person behind you, and the person behind that person, and everybody knew it. That's, you know, charging into the clutches of death. That's what they were facing when they got off those pontoon boats. It was different. I mean, you go into any battle, and there's always that possibility you won't come back. But they knew they weren't coming back. The first to land, they knew they were not coming back. Anyhow, another thing, because I'm an artist, another thing struck me to mention to you. Your rubbings, you want to use a paper that is acid-free. Ordinary paper will have acids in it. A lot of wood pulp is used in ordinary paper, and they don't remove the acids, and over time, and this is something new that you want to last, over time that will brown, it will fox, as they say. It's little, the foxing has got like little brown dots everywhere on it. But an acid-free paper, you can pick up some at, what is that art splash store? Now that just flew out of my head like nothing. Hobby Lobby, yes, Hobby Lobby. And you can get it in pads. 12 by 9 inches might be a good size. I don't know what size you're thinking of, if it needs to be, you know, big as a sheet of newsprint, that'd be different. So you might get that on a roll, but there are pads with, you know, a regular binding that you can tear the sheets out and put it up on the stone. And then artist charcoal would be great. And if you could take some interleaving paper, because if you put the charcoal against other paper, it's going to rub off a bit on that. But an interleaving paper is kind of more translucent, and it keeps that on there. And then when you get it home, there's a fixative that you can spray on there to keep the charcoal from coming off. It can be touched. It can be mounted. There's lots of concerns. And if it's something that this important, I might let a professional framer, and they have that at Michael's and Hobby Lobby. They have a framing department. They'd be able to do that mounting for you. Anyway, you might look into that, you know, for your personal one, pass that information along to others. It's always a big thing whenever you start an art, you know, a new piece, a new artwork. You know, you have to choose your materials. And I just thought I'd pass that on. KK4JBQ.
Well, Larry, honestly, I didn't think about any of that. But I will take care of that this week, and I'll go to Hobby Lobby maybe tomorrow, and get what I need there. But that's actually a good idea. I didn't think about that. But at any rate, well, listen, I'm gonna bug on out of here. I enjoyed the conversation tonight. But I need to start trying to pile a little bit of sleep up. I've lost sleep the last couple of nights. I've got insomnia really bad. And just don't sleep well at night sometimes. But I need to start trying to get that under control before I get on that plane. So anyway, I'll say 7-3s for tonight, Larry. I enjoyed the QSO, and I'll be clear on your final, sir.